Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we have a fun episode. Today, we have lots of new UFC news to discuss. We're even going to be going through every division in the UFC and giving our thoughts on who we think could be potential opponents for the rest of the year for each of the champions. We also have our conference game predictions for the NFL, new things in pop culture. We got a lot of fun things on today's episode. As January is coming to a close, guys, we only have one more week, then it's February. My time here in college dwindles to an end. You know, people say it goes by fast, but it truly, you don't really see that until you're in it. And then you're like, okay, you know, it's my final year. Okay, it's my final semester. And the first month of my final semester is already getting under my belt. I'm trying to learn as much as I can in college. You know, I've had good professors, bad professors. I think it just comes down to the people you meet, the memories you make, and the influences that you have on your life. That is what really the entire college experience is all about. And I'm thinking once college is all said and done, I'm going to be ranking every single college class I've ever had. I did it before this semester, actually before this year, my senior year, and it was fun to do. So I think I might do that for once we're graduating now, which is coming up. Crazy to think, but we don't like to focus too much on the future. We have to live in the present just a little bit. I'm not saying don't neglect your future, but live in the present just a tad bit. And we're living in the present today as we go through some new UFC updates since we last spoke. You know, we spoke last on our recap of UFC 311, which was fantastic. Such a fun card to watch. Since that Sunday, we haven't had a single new fight be announced. You know, we got the UFC 313 main event and co-main event. We've had a UFC 314 matchup between Gilbert Burns and Michael Morales announced. Not a single other fight has been announced so far this week. So we have no new matchups to go over, but we do have some new updates in the UFC realm. First off, Hanato Moicano recently said on a podcast, maybe it was his YouTube channel, that he made $950,000 for his matchup with Islam Makhachev. Imagine that, $950,000 to step in on a day's notice and get choked out in 4 minutes and 5 seconds. I find that pretty awesome, if I'm being honest. I mean, good for Hanato Moicano. His nickname's Money now. All right, Hanato Money Moicano, self-proclaimed, and it's deserved, okay? He's been earning it. He's been building a brand for himself since his win over Brad Riddell in 2022, and he deserves this. He deserves moments like this one. And, you know, he's a realist. He said he's 35. He doesn't know if he's going to be back to fight for the belt. But look, you rebook the Benil Dariush matchup, he wins that. You then give him the loser of Justin Gaethje and Dan Hooker, especially I think Dan Hooker if he loses that one. You then could potentially give him Armin Sarukian, a Charles Oliveira, one of those two coming off a loss, and he could be back in the title picture, you could say. So I wouldn't completely count Hanato Moicano out, but he is a realist and said, I don't know if I'm going to get back here. But he gave a real good breakdown on his channel of the loss, so that takes a lot of guts to really break down how you got defeated. But $950,000 Hanato Moicano providing for his family. Number two in our new updates, I think I have like seven or eight, but Khamzat Chimaev recently said that he wants the UFC 312 winner, of course, the middleweight championship matchup between your champion Driscus du Plessis and Sean Strickland going down in Australia February 8th. He says he wants a winner of that in either May or June, and then he wants to defend that belt in Abu Dhabi in October. I love this. I find this fantastic, and I think this works perfectly for a June pay-per-view. Following the year, 314 is going to be in April. You get 315 in May. Then you run 316, 317, and 318, and 319. They usually do 3 to 4 pay-per-views between the months of June and August. So if we could get him end of June, something like that, beginning of June, that'd be fantastic. I got DDP walking out of this one, you know, early prediction. We'll be coming back with a full breakdown. But, you know, I just think he's better than Sean Strickland personally. And in the Khamzat Chimaev matchup, I mean, DDP probably is the best style with how weird he fights to beat Khamzat Chimaev. But after seeing what a perfectly healthy, perfectly weighed in, perfectly attributed Khamzat Chimaev can do against Robert Whittaker, there's no way I'm picking anyone against him. Now, my main question is, who could Hamzat Chimaev potentially be taking on. And I think the answer lies with the matchup we have going down on our next fight night, which is Izzul Ahsanian versus Nazarudin Imavov. And if you think Izzy isn't just going to be given a title shot off of one win, then you're silly, okay? And if Nazarudin Imavov wins that, there's your perfect next title challenger. But, I mean, other than that, Whitaker's got at least 2 to 3 fights to work back to it. Sean Strickland's going to need at least another win if he wants to have a rematch later in the year. Other than that, Kyle Barallo, Marvin Vettori, Anthony Hernandez, Yershar Magomedov, they're all too far down to be fighting for a belt anytime soon. So I think Khamzat, if he does end up, if this what he says does come true and he wins the belt in the summer, him versus the winner of Imavov and Adesanya would be a perfect, perfect main event for UFC 3, oh gosh, what will we be at, 320-something in October. Exciting stuff. Johnny Walker, the light heavyweight man, said that he wants to return in April or May following a rib injury he suffered before UFC 311. He was supposed to take on Bogdan Guskov. Instead, Bogdan manhandled his short-nosed opponent. Actually, he almost got submitted there in round one for a second before he actually locked in a submission. But good on Bogdan Guskov for winning that fight. We just need to rebook that. Johnny Walker versus Bogdan Guskov. You can do it as an Apex main event in May. You could have it just in front of a crowd even in April or May, but I think rebooking that is the best option. I mean, other than that, number 12 ranked Asmat Mirzakhanov, he's undefeated. You could do that. There really isn't anyone above him he should be fighting, and Dominic Reyes, I think, maybe having a bigger fight lined up with someone like Volkan Ozdemir or Nikita Krylov. We'll have to see, but Johnny Walker, please, please get back in action. I hate seeing you get knocked out. He's probably for a win. Lightweight division news, as Matheus Gamrot says he wants to return on the London card, which is going down March 22nd. That card has apparently filled up, so I don't know if Matheus is actually going to get on there. He mentioned he wants a Beneil Dariush matchup as his next fight. He did lose to him in 2022, but, you know, I think he would win a rematch against Beneil Dariush. I personally would like someone else. Okay, I'd run back the Rafael Vaziv fight before that. They're priming Paddy Pimblett for a fight. And when I look at potential options for Paddy, they mentioned Moicano. I would love that fight. But I think a real test for Paddy Pimblett would be someone like Matheus Gamrot. But Matheus is coming off a fight of the year contender against Dan Hooker. If they want to give him a legit name, there's always Michael Chandler. And there's always someone like, well, not a Moicano, for example. They might reward him and give him someone like Matheus Gamrot. He's perfectly healthy. You know, he tapped out in 4 minutes. Didn't really take any damage. I don't think he took any, really. So we'll go with Matheus Gamrot to take on anyone around him. He's ranked number 8 right now, but I don't think it'll be in London. I think it'll be later in the year. More news as we talk about London, as Lerone Murphy has recently said he has some fight news updates. Lerone Murphy is currently ranked at number 11 in the men's featherweight division. He had a big win over Edson Barbosa and Dan Ige last year, so he's in prime position for a top 10 opponent. Now, who could that be? I'm, you know, 9 ranked Aljamain Sterling does kind of pique my curiosity, but there's also the 8th ranked Josh Emmett. And there's also the 7th ranked Arnold Allen, and you also have the 6th ranked Brian Ortega. And if it was up to me, I'm going to eliminate Emmett. I think Emmett's fighting up with his next matchup. I'm seeing maybe Josh Emmett versus someone like the loser of Diego Lopez, Emery Rodriguez. There's also Arnold Allen, but Arnold Allen, you know, he's also from the UK. He's from England. I think him and Lerone might somewhat be boys. So I'm looking at the number 6 ranked Brian Ortega for their next matchup. Now, when could that take place? Truly at any point, but it unfortunately doesn't look like that Lerone will make it onto that London card. I hope he's able to get on one later in the year. They usually go back at some point. So Lerone Murphy versus Brian Ortega is my prediction for what the fight will be announced. But Lerone does have fight news coming. Second to last fight news I have is Merab recently says he wants a fight in March or April, then he wants to fight in the summer, then he wants to fight at Madison Square Garden in, what will that be, November. So we are going to be talking about champions later on, but if I'm going to be honest, for this plan to work, Merab's going to need a lot of things to fall into place. First off, in that March to April, I'm looking more at April, I'd say, or even I'd say early May, is probably a Sean O'Malley rematch. You just give him the Sean O'Malley rematch. Now, for the summer, Petr Yan, whether he fights or doesn't fight, he could be another opponent rematch there. Now, if Corey Sandhagen can get one win, this would be a perfect co-main event for Madison Square Garden. And Merab, Henry Cejudo recently said, hey, Merab is the bantamweight goat. Okay, and it's kind of hard to argue with the resume he's been on. I mean, he beats Marlon Moraes. Then he beats Jose Aldo. And then he's beaten Sean O'Malley. And he's beaten Pierre Jan. And now he's beaten Umar Nurmagomedov. And he is clearing through. He beat Henry Cejudo as well. I mean, he has beaten so many killers in this division. Merab getting four title defenses in 2025. I mean, I think it's pretty likely. And as of right now, you know, him and Makhachev, I think, may be tied for Fighter of the Year right now. Okay, I know it's early, but with both of their performances at UFC 311, they're in a great spot to take that throne. And the final fight news we have is that the UFC 314 main event, which is going down in Miami, April, I want to say 14th, 8th, 13th, somewhere around there. It is looking likely that's going to be the rematch between Ilia Topura and Alexander Volkanovski. Now, I get that Volkanovski's the GOAT. Okay, I get that Volkanovski is regarded as one of, if not the greatest featherweights of all time, but I would much rather see Diego Lopez and Yair Rodriguez, especially if Diego Lopez wins that, getting a fight against Ilia Topura. I would rather see Muzafar Evloev get a new shot, because Volkanovski, since losing to Ilia Topura last February, he hasn't done anything. He's been on the sidelines. Meanwhile, Topura went out and knocked out Max Holloway. Something Volkanovski. Volkanovski had three fights with Max, could never drop him. Here is Ilia Topura in their first fight, and he knocks him out. Becomes the first man to ever knock down and knock out Max Holloway. So I think Ilia Topura has gotten better. I think this is turning into sort of like a McGregor thing, where McGregor got so big, you're not just fighting the abilities and the mentality of a fighter, you are fighting the enigma they hold and the certain status they've acclaimed. So if that is the case, I do think Ilia Topura wins and probably knocks out Volk again. I honestly don't know if it would go better for Volkanovski a second time around. I honestly compare it to his fight with Islam Makhachev, which, mind you, was on short notice, but there were no changes made, and he actually looked worse in that rematch. So if anything, I would have rather had Volk fight Diego Lopez, fight Josh Emmett, fight freaking Muzafar Evloev for all I care. Ilia Topura is on to bigger and better things, and I just think that Volkanovski is just going to be another knockout added to his record. But that's all the new fight news that we have in terms of, I shouldn't even say fight news. These are all rumors and stuff, but a lot of fun stuff is going on in the UFC, and 2025 is primed for a massive, massive year. Now, in terms of the UFC is fun as they rank every single fighter, and with UFC 311 coming to a close, we do have some newly ranked fighters. So the rankings have changed as of Tuesday, January 21st. So let's look at the changes. Starting with the women's bantamweight division, Nora Cornoli is now ranked in the top 15 with the departure of Holly Holmes. Holly Holmes no longer with the UFC. Nora is coming off a loss to the 13th ranked Jacqueline Cavalcante, but they don't really have a lot of women to put in the rankings. Aileen Perez with her win jumps up to the 11th spot. I love that. I think she should have a big fight coming up with a Misha Tate, and Irene Aldana, a Macy Chison, a lot of options there. But other than that, nothing too much has changed there. Everyone kind of moves up a spot. Mayra Buena Silva drops down from 6 to 7. Macy Chison drops down from 4 to 5. Good for all the women in the bantamweight division. No changes in the women's pound for pound, women's strawweight, women's flyweight, men's heavyweight. But the men's light heavyweight spot, we do have Jan Blachowicz passing Jamal Hill from 3 to 4. Jamal Hill now ranked at number 4. I think there's so many options for Jamal Hill. You've got Alexander Rakic. You've got the loser of Jan Blachowicz and Carlos Ubert, who are fighting at UFC London. You've got Khalil Roundtree Jr. You've got Nikita Krylov. There are so many options for Jamal Hill. I think the sky's the limit for the number 3 ranked Jan Blachowicz, the former champion himself. I think him versus Carlos Ubert is going to be a fantastic fight. I don't know who to pick for that. After watching Ulberg take on Volkan Ozdemir, Ulberg is talented, but he didn't have necessarily that finishing capabilities that we've seen in his past few fights when he took on Volkan Ozdemir. So I think Jan's going to give him a lot of challenges, but Blachowicz, he gets one win, I guarantee they're going to try and run back him versus Barra. And imagine if Magomed wins, there's just even more fights to do right there. Men's middleweight, men's welterweight has no changes, but as we get into the men's lightweight, Grant Dawson, following his win over Diego Ferreira, is now ranked at number 15. I find it interesting they booted Joel Alvarez, so they valued Grant Dawson beating Diego Ferreira as a number 15 ranked spot compared to Joel Alvarez beating and actually finishing Dracar Close. Find that very fascinating. So Grant Dawson now in the rankings at 15. Benoit Saint-Denis drops 2 spots down to 14. Jalen Turner is now ranked 13th, and Paddy Pimblett is now at 12. Matchmaking the bottom there. Grant Dawson versus Benoit Saint-Denis, I think, is a fantastic fight. I don't think they're going to have Patty fight down. I think Patty's fighting up against, like we mentioned before, a Moicano, a Gamrot. And as for Jalen Turner, he is also coming off a loss. But so is number 11th ranked Hafel Fiziev. I think those two would match up pretty dang good. But good job to Grant Dawson. You're now in the UFC rankings again. Hopefully he won't get knocked out like he did when he took on Bobby King Green. Featherweight division, no changes. As we get to the men's, Piotr Jan, now ranked at number 2, as Umar has dropped down to 3. I don't think this makes any sense. Truly, this makes absolutely no sense because Umar absolutely took Merab to the limit. I mean, this was a 48-47 win for Merab. I mean, Umar took rounds 1 and 2 and might have won round 3. Clearly lost round 4 and 5, but did much better than Piotr Jan. Piotr Jan didn't win a single round over Merab. All right, Merab absolutely dominated Piotr. He did not dominate Umar. Okay, you know, he got the better of Umar at the end, but I don't understand the ranking change here. So I'm curious as why Piotr Jan getting a win over Song Yadong and Devin Figueiredo is warranted more than taking the champion to a close five-round decision, but that's just me. Men's flyweight has no new changes, but the biggest changes come in the men's pound-for-pound rankings as Merab is now ranked number 5, just as we correctly predicted. Bilal Muhammad down to 6 and Dricus du Plessis down to 7. Merab at 5 makes complete sense. I mean, let me read you the names above him. Itapira, Pehera, John Jones, Makachev. And here's why I like Merab here. Merab, his resume is better than Bilal and Dricus du Plessis. And when we're talking about title fights, when we're talking about champions, Merab beat Sean O'Malley and turned around and defended the belt 4 months later. Bilal picked up a win over Leon Edwards in dominant fashion, had a canceled fight before that. He fought an injured Gilbert Burns before that, fought a very green Sean Brady. I think Bilal at 6 is way too high. But as for Dricus, I like perfectly where he's at. I mean, he's finished. Robert Whittaker took Sean Strickland to a fight of the night back when they fought, and he submitted Israel Adesanya to defend his belt. So I think Dricus at 6 would make a lot more sense. And honestly, Tom Aspinall at 8, I mean, let's be real. If this was actually the pound-for-pound best in the UFC, Tom Aspinall's number 2. John Jones is number 1. But we'll have to see, because if Tom Aspinall and John Jones do fight, then maybe you'll see Tom Aspinall knock him out and become the number 1 pound-for-pound fighter. But Islam stays at number 1. I mean, it is going to take something special to beat as a Makhachev. I mean, Moicano showed his neck for hardly a second, and that was wraps. That was wraps. Makhachev wasted no time locking up the Darce choke, and he recently said it's his favorite choke. He even has his own technique with the forearm to get it done. So, fun stuff in the UFC rankings. They have been updated. Go check them out. I'll tell you something else that you guys should check out, and that is Discussing Film on Twitter, as or X, if you want to call it that, as they post the top pop culture news, and we go over 10 new updates, 10 new headlines in the pop culture world. And as of now, we got a lot of fun ones for you. And number 1, Jamie Foxx says Leonardo DiCaprio had a hard time saying racial slurs into Django Unchained at first. Samuel Jackson goes, say that shit, mother effer, it's just another Tuesday, F them. Wow. I found that absolutely crazy, but The Django Unchained, one of the best movies that I've ever seen. Quentin Tarantino delivered a masterpiece there, and Leonardo DiCaprio plays a phenomenal villain. Even Samuel L. Jackson played a little hidden villain at the end, and it's honestly a good thing that Leonardo DiCaprio wasn't very sold on saying the N-word. It would have been more concerned. It would have been more concerned if he was happy saying it, but yeah. Good film. Check that out. And number 2, Paramount will no longer be releasing the weekly box office numbers for Better Man. The film made $1.9 million in the U.S. on a $110 million budget. I've heard it made $25 million overseas, which means this is one of the biggest losses of a film I've seen. Now, I think just part of it is I'm not big on musical biops. You know, I watched Elvis, which was fantastic, but it really takes a lot for me to watch something. And the fact I'm watching this guy in Robbie Williams, who I've never really heard of, and he's a CGI monkey, it's just kind of goofy. And who gave them $110 million? I don't know what they thought this movie was going to be, but pretty interesting they're no longer releasing the box office numbers. Very, very fascinating. And number 3, Robert Eggers, who did direct the hit film Nosferatu, which was recently in theaters, says he has no interest in directing a film set in the modern era. The idea of having to photograph a car makes me ill, he said, and the idea of photographing a cell phone is just death. So, no. Well, I'm sorry, Robert, that you don't like the modern era. That doesn't mean you can just go to the past all the time to make movies, does it? Well, I guess it is, but I kind of get what he's saying. You know, you kind of like to romanticize the past more than it was. I mean, if we're actually thinking about the time Nosferatu took place, was that Great Britain or whatever, Transylvania? I mean, it was some pretty rough times. We have it much easier here in the year 2025. And number 4, Denis Villeneuve has not been nominated for Best Director at the Oscars for both Dune films. It's just a disgrace. just a disgrace. The best film of 2024 was Dune Part 2. They're disrespecting that movie so, so hard. I hope it wins some awards. I truly do. You know, I'm not really big on watching award shows. Actually, what am I saying? I'm not big. I never have watched an award show for celebrities or movies or anything. But I do hope if anyone's going to win, that's Denis Villeneuve. He is a phenomenal director and he deserves his credit. Give him his credit, Hollywood. Goodness me. And number, what are we on? 5, Captain America Brave New World reportedly has a $180 million budget. The film is currently tracking to open with $95 million domestically. I didn't even know it was coming out. Oh, Captain America Brave New World is out. I don't really have an interest in that, but opening weekend at $95 million, that is some pretty, pretty good. Actually, tracking to open with $95 million. I don't even know if that's opening weekend. That just might be its opening, so... Look, Sam Wilson looking to make some money as he is the new Captain America. Oh, I can't remember the actor's name. Whoever played Ha, what's his name? Oh my gosh, I can't. Sam Wilson's the character's name, right? I don't know, but I haven't watched a Marvel movie in a while. Maybe I'll get around to this one. Probably not. I'm a serial optimist when it comes to going and watching these things. And number 6, gosh, all of these are Oscars nominations, which I could really care less about. Major films that got 0 Oscars. Okay, let's go through it. Blitz, no idea what that is. Furiosa, my dad, every time he saw the commercial, he'd be like, oh, I kind of want to go see that. And I was like, I don't really have an interest in it. It's a prequel. Baby Girl at 3, which I'm pretty sure is just porn from what I've been told. It's Nicole Kidman just being slept with by random guys. Juror number 2. Now, the reason that didn't get any Oscars is because it came out on HBO Max. It didn't even come out in theaters, but that was actually a pretty good film. Kind of slower paced, but okay. Long Legs. Look, Long Legs had the best first act, second act, and one of the worst third acts I've seen in a film. Talk about one of the biggest buildups to one of the biggest plot twist letdowns. I mean, the plot twist is so dumb. You're kind of just like, okay, that's it. So big letdown there. Civil War, you know, I had that in the background when I was working on some stuff, and honestly, I don't even think I paid attention to it. Challengers, I mean, no one wants to watch Zendaya in a three-way with two gay guys. Madam Web, worst film of all. Are we really saying major films like that? Madam Web is not a major film. We Live in Time, never heard of it. The Piano Lesson, never heard of it. Transformers 1, didn't see it. I'm a Michael Bay Transformers fan. And I saw The TV Glow, which I think is a scary movie. So a lot of these did not get Oscars, and that makes sense because some of these don't deserve Oscars, okay? We should specify that disgusting film. My goodness. At number 7, can I find something non-related? A lot of films. Sebastian Stan, I guess we're doing more Oscars, guys. Sebastian Stan is the first time Oscars nominee for his performance as Donald Trump in The Apprentice. He actually looked like he played a decent Donald Trump. Obviously not as good. I think Donald Trump is one of those, you know, characters that you cannot really replicate when it comes to a TV show or movie. Donald Trump is just too dang good at being himself. It's almost impossible to replicate. So good job to whatever his face is. But here we go. Number 8, Kumail Nanjiani has reportedly been cast in Fallout Season 2. Fallout was such a surprisingly good first season. I mean, you know, I never played the game, but actually, I know I've tried it out, but I never really committed to it. But the fact that they were able to make it look so good, and it took you into this post-apocalyptic world where the entire world let off bombs and stuff, and the entire mystery of it all and the characters, it was fantastic. And Kumail is super funny. He also can play a serious role at times. I think he'll be a good addition to Fallout Season 2. And number 9, Leonardo DiCaprio will star in the new movie Devil in the White City with Martin Scorsese set to direct for 20th Century. The story follows a serial killer who murdered dozens of people while the city of Chicago was busy with hosting the World's Columbian Exposition of 1893. Devil in the White City. I don't like that. That sounds demonic, yet the plot sounds absolutely phenomenal. I can't lie. Is he going to be the serial killer? I don't know. We'll have to see. And at number 10, here you go. Benedict Cumberbatch reveals he will not appear as Doctor Strange in Avengers Doomsday, but he will have a major role in Avengers Secret Wars. So I do find that fascinating. He's not going to be in the prequel movie to Avengers Secret Wars, yet he's going to have a major role in Avengers Secret Wars. I'm trying to think of a comparison there between Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, but I really can't think of one. So we're going to be getting Benedict Cumberbatch at some point. Should be exciting to see that. But those are all your new headlines in pop culture. A lot of fun stuff, a lot of good stuff coming around. And speaking of good things coming around, this upcoming weekend, we'll find out which two teams are in the Super Bowl. And I'm just going to be honest, the NFL playoffs have just, you know, there's really no hype. And I know it's probably because the Vikings aren't in it or even the Lions, but there's just something about the Commanders and Eagles, which isn't that exciting. And as for Bills and Chiefs, you know, it'll only be exciting if the Bills can pull off the upset. But you know, let's do our predictions right here. I mean, Sunday, January 26th at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Time, the Commanders will visit the Eagles. And this will be their third meeting of the year back on December 22nd. Commanders won 36-33 with a last-second touchdown on November 14th. The Eagles beat the Commanders 26-18 in a close home victory. So these two are familiar with each other. They play each other twice a year, every year. And it has just been such a Cinderella run for the Commanders, almost, you know, beating the Buccaneers in a close game, probably the second or third best game of the playoffs. Then they go and they put up 45 on the number one seed Lions in Detroit. Utterly insane. Jane Daniels has locked down Rookie of the Year. I mean, it's not even a competition. I mean, it's honestly incredible the stuff he's done. And this Commanders team, you know, perfectly healthy, but it won't be easy. You know, they're taking on Saquon Barkley, who in my opinion is going to finish third in MVP voting. A perfectly healthy Jalen Hurts, who can throw for under 100 yards, yet run 70 yards on the ground. It's incredible. Their defense looked insanely good in that game against the Packers. They really were able to close them out. And even in the game against the Rams, they looked phenomenal. And even though both of those ended up being somewhat close at the end, I mean, they stepped up when it mattered most. And I mean, Devontae Smith, AJ Brown, also great additions for the wide receiver slot. I'm just hoping this is a close competitive game. But the weird thing is it doesn't feel like a playoff game. Like, it doesn't feel like the winner of this is going to the Super Bowl. And it's, if the Commanders make it, what a run they will have gone on. But they won't feel like a Super Bowl team, if I'm being honest. And as for the Eagles, they're good. They're the number two seed, yet they don't really feel like a Super Bowl team. You know, really, when I looked at the playoff format, you know, the Vikings felt like a Super Bowl team. The Lions, without a doubt, felt like a Super Bowl team. Even the Rams kind of gave a bit of a Super Bowl teamy vibe. But the Commanders, not really. And as for the Eagles, I mean, I'm going to root for them because I had Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts on my fantasy team all year. They carried me to a 16-man league championship, which I will reiterate over and over and over again. So I will continually root for the Eagles throughout the playoffs, especially if they take on the Chiefs in the Super Bowl in a rematch. But I could care less who makes it. I could really care less who make it, but I'll pick the Eagles. We'll say, you know, they won 28-22 over Rams. They won, 22-10 over the, Packers. So I'm going to say, 24-17 the Eagles win, and it's going to be 24-10 pretty much the entire second half, and the Commanders are going to get a touchdown with under 5 minutes left, but then they're going to be unable to get the ball back. That's my prediction right here for you. Now, as for the other good game, this feels like the Super Bowl. This feels like a Super Bowl matchup here. Bills visiting the Chiefs. You already know the history. You know the history between the Bills and the Chiefs. I mean, this is one of the favorite modern rivalries in sports. Okay, this is going to be a fun game. Going down at 5:30, of course, in Kansas City. Kansas City, in my mind, has only lost one game all season long with their starters in, and that is none others than the Bills game, which that game took place on, when was that actually? Because the Chiefs were undefeated somewhat, back on November 17th, 30-21. The Bills won, and Josh Allen had a 20-yard run to seal the deal. As far as the playoffs has been going for these teams, I mean, you saw the Chiefs get a round one bye. They were able to manhandle the Texans, and now they're in this spot they are right here. As for the Bills, I mean, they had to earn it over a game against the Broncos where they got scored on the opening drive, then proceeded to put up 31 unanswered. And that Ravens game, man, probably the best game we've seen in the playoffs so far. They can thank Mark Andrews for this spot right here. Lamar Jackson isn't even cursed, okay? I just think it's the Ravens at this point. For this game, what's it going to come down to? I mean, it's a tale as old as time. It's Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes. Okay, we know how good the offenses are. These two quarterbacks lead their offenses, and the offenses match up pretty well. Obviously, I'm going to give Travis Kelce the edge at wide receiver, at a tight end. I'm going to give probably James Cook the edge at running back for the Bills. As far as wide receivers go, these wide receivers are pretty similar, and there are a lot of B-tier wide receivers. I mean, maybe some could be getting into the A-tier as time comes along, but at the end of the day, this is going to come down to one thing and one thing only, and that is the defenses. end of the day, it's going to be a defensive battle. It's going to be whatever defense can step up and truly, truly lead this team to a Super Bowl. And in my opinion, from what I've seen, you know, all odds are against the Bills in this one. Okay, and the safe bet is to pick the Chiefs. But do we like to do safe bets here? On the Surprise Jet Podcast, no, we predict the UFC fights every single week. And we always like to pick a couple underdogs here and there. So without a doubt, we're picking the Bills. I'm rooting for the Bills. I'm just not a fan. Not a fan of the Chiefs whatsoever. They have made themselves increasingly dislikable. I mean, I almost find it amusing how dislikable they've made themselves be. So for that, I think the Bills win 33-31 on a game-leading touchdown drive. Okay, they're going to be going for a field goal, and they're going to unintentionally score. And for the first time ever, you're going to see the Chiefs not be able to get into field goal territory, and the Bills are going to stuff them in a competitive back-and-forth game. Of course, Chiefs are favored to win this one. And according to NFL.com, here are the four things to watch for during this game. I swear if they mentioned Taylor Swift. I swear. Okay, here's one thing that they are noting is that the Chiefs are attempting to do what no team has done. It was win three straight Super Bowls. The Bills have actually never won a Super Bowl, and they're trying to get back to the game for the first time since 1993. The team's rivalry technically dates back to 1960 in the AFL's inaugural season, but the recent showdowns between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes have escalated to another level. Absolutely. They have met 8 times since 2020, including 3 in the postseason. The Bills are 4-1 the regular season, but the Chiefs are 3-0 in the playoffs, including their legendary games in the divisional round in 2021 and 2023. After Sunday, Allen and Mahomes will trail only one elite QB duo, Brady and Peyton Manning, who faced each other 5 times in the postseason. They have the most playoff matchups between two quarterbacks, and the Bills were the only team to take down the Chiefs this season when they played in Week 11. That game was in Buffalo, where the Bills went undefeated all year long. As for this game, this one will be taking place in Kansas City, and in my mind, the Chiefs went undefeated at home all year long. I would not count that Broncos loss in the slice. That Broncos loss does not count. So this is going to be action-packed. This is going to be exciting. I got an Eagles-Bills Super Bowl, which I think would be fun. I really do. You know, that would really show if Josh Allen can win the Super Bowl finally, or if the Jalen Hurts can finally win a Super Bowl himself. So a lot will be decided this Sunday, but if it's the Chiefs and Commanders, if it's the Chiefs and the Eagles, if it's the Commanders and the Bills, I won't really mind. You know, I'm honestly not even pumped for this year's Super Bowl. The fact the Vikings were such a letdown yet again, it just has left a damper taste in my mouth. At the same time, it's just football. You know, all this, it's just football. There are other more important things in life, so I try not to get too caught up in that. But those are your predictions for the two games. And the next time we talk about NFL, actually not the next time, but the one after that, it'll be our final prediction for this season. It's been a pretty good season. It was a pretty fun season, but it's not fun, the games themselves. It's fun watching them with your friends. I'll say that for certain. But that's all we got for the NFL on today's episode. But that's not all we got for today's show here on the Spread Jet Podcast. We love to talk about UFC. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go through all 11 UFC divisions, and I'm going to give some of my thoughts on who I think these champions could be taking on throughout the rest of the year. Let us start with the women's divisions and work our way up. So we'll go from women's bantamweight all the way down. Actually, we'll go women's bantamweight, women's flyweight, women's strawweight. Then we'll hit the men's flyweight all the way through heavyweight. So women's bantamweight to start off. Your champion is Juliana Pena. And I believe at some point she's going to take on Kayla Harrison. I'm hoping it's in the next few months, but max, you're going to see 2 women's bantamweight title fights this year. Obviously, I think Kayla Harrison is going to dominate and take the belt from Julia Pena, but that raises the question of who she could take on later in the year, potentially at UFC, the December event, the October event, September, any of those will be taking place in that time. And if I'm being honest, there really isn't anyone right now. You do have the number 4 ranked and number 5 ranked Norma Dumont, Macy Chison, who I believe have a fight booked. You also have Myra Bueno Silva taking on, I want to say, oh gosh, is it, I don't even know who they're taking. I don't even know any of these women's bantamweight matchups that are going to be taking place. But I think Norma Dumont would be a great challenger against someone like Kayla Harrison once she wins the belt. But depending on the circumstances, I mean, if Julia Pena beats Kayla Harrison, I think this division might be doomed. Kayla Harrison is the only way to save the women's bantamweight division. For the women's flyweight, Valentina Shevchenko is your champion. I believe she'll be taking on Manon Fiorot at some point in the year at max. You're getting two title fights out of these two, out of Valentina Shevchenko this year. And I think she'll retain when she fights Maya Fiora, but that raises the question, who could be a potential next opponent? And you have a couple of names in the hat, number 5-ranked Natalia Silva, number 4-ranked Macy Barber, and number 3-ranked Erin Blanchfield. I think out of those three, two of them are going to face each other, and one of them will be taking on Alexa Grasso. And if I could matchmake, I think they're going to do Erin Blanchfield and Macy Barber and have Natalia Silva take on Alexa Grasso. And if Natalia Silva wins, she will go and take on the winner of Shevchenko and Fiorat. And if Blanchfield and Barber fight, I don't even want to pick a winner for that right now. That would be such a close fight. But after seeing what Valentina Shevchenko did to Alexa Grasso, there is really no other women I see in this division beating her. The only other woman I could actually see beating Valentina Shevchenko would be Zhang Weili. And honestly, if Zhang Weili beats Tatiana Suarez, which I think she will do at UFC 312, do not be surprised if you see Zhang Weili versus Valentina Shevchenko at some point in the fourth or third quarter of the year, which actually sounds very realistic. Shevchenko beats Fiorat, Weili beats Suarez. I mean, this would set up a perfect match between these two. If anything, I think that's the correct decision to go in. Final women's division with Zhang Weili, of course, as your champion in the women's strawweight division. She's taken on Tatiana Suarez as the number one contender. Tatiana poses probably the biggest threat in the division. Undefeated, great grappling. Striking has appeared to be decent from what we've seen. And if Tatiana does win, you'll see a rematch between these two later in the year. But if Zhang Weili wins, there's already a rematch set up between John Chaonin and her. Or you could even do Virna Jandroba, who's ranked number 3, taking on John Chaonin to then get a title shot. But I mean, if you're honestly asking me, Zhang Weili and Valentina Shevchenko, I truly thought Grasso had Shevchenko's number when they fought at the Sphere. Clearly, I was wrong. These two are not going to lose. If anything, it'll be when they fight each other at some point, which has been being discussed since 2022 for this fight to take place. Actually, I think 2021 this was being discussed. I do think Zhang Weili will come out on top. But at max, for all women's divisions, you're going to get two fights each. And as we've seen in the past, you know, majority of the time, you're only going to get one title fight between these two. So I'm hoping every women's division can get at least two fights in. As of right now, we only have one booked. So the women's strawweight division has the best chance to not have just one, but maybe two. In terms of what a potential second fight could be, look, let's say Zhang Weili beating Tatiana Suarez, then beating Yan Chaon and Virna Jandiroba. There's always Amanda Lemos, Mackenzie Dern lurking. I would actually really love to see Mackenzie Dern get a title shot, if that would be possible. But that's all your women's title fights. Look, I don't really see any titles changing except for Kayla Harrison inevitably winning hers. When we look at the men's flyweight division, we don't have a fight booked as of right now, but rumors going around are that number 4-ranked Kai Kara-France will be getting the next title shot. Of course, the 3rd-ranked Tamir Albasi is coming off a loss. And number 2-ranked Brandon Moreno is already 0-3 against Pantoa and only has a win over Albasi. And the number 1-ranked Brandon Royval is already 0-2 against Pantoja, and no one's really interested in a third fight with those two. So Brandon Royval did pick up a split decision fight the night win over Tetsuro Taira, but there is a fight with the number 6-ranked Manel Cape on the table. And if Royval does beat Cape, that fight is inevitable. But the flyweight division is getting very, very interesting, okay? It is picking up heavily. It's a heavenly division. The title picture is picking up heavily, and there is not really a clear competitor. So I say you do Kai Kara-France versus Pantoa. You just make that fight. Then we see the outcome of some fights between Manel Cape and Brandon Royval. I think they should also make Tetsuro Taira versus Brandon Moreno. I also think you should do Asu Almabayev versus Amir Albazi. I think that fight could work as well. And you can do Tagir Limbekov versus Steve Ursig. Actually, I'd rather have him versus Alex Perez. And then you could do someone like Joshua Van versus Steve Ursig. But if it's up to me, if I have to give an official prediction, I'm going to say, of course, Kai Kara-France. And then I'm going to say Manel Cape takes on Pantoa later in the year. But as of right now, no fight news whatsoever throughout March as of right now. So if anything, we'd be seeing it in April, which I doubt. You could be looking at May for your next Alexander Pantoa fight. But he's just been dominating all these guys. I'm actually really excited to see Kai Asakura in his next fight. Kai doesn't have a fight booked, but I hopefully he should. Let's see. Bantamweight division, we already mentioned it earlier on. I think the Merab Dvevashvili path is pretty clear. He rematches Sean O'Malley. takes on Piotr Jan next. And then if Corey Sandhagen can get a win, there could be an option right there. You also have Henry Cejudo taking on Song Yadong at UFC Seattle, which I think will be a fantastic fight. And the winner of that could be poised for a top five fight after that. But in terms of biggest rising, I mean, you're really only looking at the top five for potential next opponents for Merab. And are any of them really deserving? I'd say Piotr Jan is the most deserving out of any of these. Sean O'Malley's coming off a loss to Merab, for goodness sake. So if it was up to me, I would give Piotr Jan the next title shot. But let's be real, it's Sean O'Malley. He will draw bigger numbers, and the UFC is all about numbers. So we already talked about Merab earlier on. I think we all know the path he is set up for, which I don't see him losing the belt anytime soon. I think Merab is in for a nice long reign as champion. Featherweight division is up next, and Ito Pura, like we mentioned, will probably be taking on Alexander Volkanovski, but what after that? What do you do after that? And there's only one logical reason. So Ito Pura is on such a massive level right now. He's at two fights a year. He's at two fights a year just because he takes time to really train. And his next opponent is going to be one of two people. If Diego Lopez can beat Yair Rodriguez, which I think we all agree Diego Lopez should beat Yair Rodriguez, he will be next in line for a title shot. But if Yair wins, I think Mosvar Evlov at number four gets the next title shot. Or in a shock turn of events, which I think is even lesser now, Ito Pura moves up in weight. I don't see that happening. But what I can really see happening is he takes on Volk, knocks out Volk again, then takes on either Mosvar Evlov or most likely Diego Lopez with a win over Yair. But if Yair wins, you can say goodbye to a Mosvar Evlov. You can say goodbye to a Diego Lopez title shot. You can say hello. Or what am I trying to say? There's no chance that Yair Rodriguez is fighting for a belt again. That's what I'm trying to say. He is in a spot right now, career-wise, where he is kind of being primed to set up other guys like a Diego Lopez, like a Leron Murphy, and even maybe even like a Bryce Mitchell. You know, I would love to see Bryce Mitchell in the title picture. He's always funny to listen to, but Ito Pura, similar to these guys, don't see him losing the belt anytime soon. Next up, the men's lightweight division, and Islam Makhachev is really in a great spot to get three fights in this year. I am really hoping that he does, but we're kind of in a weird spot. We're in a very weird spot where apparently Islam is not fighting Armin next. They want Armin to earn a title shot. And so my question beckons is that, are they giving Oliveira the title shot? I mean, there's no one really from another promotion to bring in, and Aussie Sarukian taking on Oliveira would make the most sense. But when we look at the rest of the division, you know, you got Gaethje at number three taking on Dan Hooker at number six. We already know Hooker will stand no chance against Makhachev. And after seeing how Charles Oliveira and how Max Holloway handled Justin Gaethje, I don't think Gaethje's fighting for a belt anytime soon. Poirier at four, they're setting him up for a legacy fight. Holloway at five, he's tied more to a BMF fight with Charles Oliveira than anyone else. Michael Chandler's nowhere near a title shot, so it's really tough to see what'll happen for Islam Makhachev. So as much as a three fights in a year is primed, he doesn't have an opponent, which really begs the question, what are we going to do? And I think the only logical reason is in the next 2 to 3 months, we do Armin versus Charles Oliveira in a five-round fight. We all know how close that three-round fight was. I mean, truly, it was should have been a draw. It was so close. Round one to Charles, round two to Armin. 50-50 split for round three. These two do a five-round fight. We finally decide who is best fit to take on Islam, and that fight can take place at Abu Dhabi in the summer. Something like that. So Islam is so ready to have three fights in a year, but I just don't see it materializing. Welterweight division, I mean, I'm not a Belal Muhammad supporter at all. I want Shavkat to take him on, and obviously Shavkat will be taking him on next, and I think Shavkat will take the belt from him. Now, in terms of what are we going to do next, I mean, there are a lot, and I say a lot of interesting matchups being put together. So first off, number four ranked Jack Del Malle and number one Leon Edwards, they have a fight tied together. The number 10 ranked Jeff Neal has a fight tied to Carlos Prates. Colby Covington will most likely be fighting down his next matchup. Him versus Ian Garry could be a fun fight. Joaquin Buckley should be fighting up, so you're going to either have Joaquin Buckley taking on Sean Brady or Kamaru Usman. I think Buckley versus Usman would be a very fun fight if you were to do that. But if we are to get three fights out of the welterweight champion this year, Bilal will need to fight soon against Shavkat, which I don't know if Shavkat is fully healthy. So three fights does not really seem plausible. I'm going for two. And if Jack Del Maddalena beats Leon Edwards, which he probably should, you'll be seeing Jack Del Maddalena fight the winner of Bilal and Shavkat. So hopefully we get Jack Del Maddalena versus Shavkat Rakhmonov. That is a fantastic welterweight matchup. But this division is building up so many killers. Carlos Prates, Michael Morales, Ian Gary, Joaquin Buckley, Sean Brady, Jack Del Maddalena, Shavkat. There's a new wave of welterweight fighters, and you're going to see them all mixing together in the welterweight division over the coming years. But if Bilal beats Shavkat, I mean, all hope just may be lost. And what if Leon beats Jack Del Maddalena? What are we going to do? We really need this new blood to save us all. At middleweight, Dricus du Plessis is your champion, taking on Sean Strickland. And if all things are good in the world, you should be seeing Dricus du Plessis win this matchup. That is the best case scenario if Dricus wins, because we all know if Dricus loses to Sean, they will have to have a rematch, which would just drag things out. So I think Dricus beats Sean in the rematch. Khamzat takes the belt from Dricus, and you get Khamzat versus the winner of Nazanyevov and Adesanya. We discussed it before. It makes the most logical sense, but then again, it's all on paper. We have no idea how any of these fights are going to play out. And if Sean does win, they might just feed him to Khamzat right off the bat. I mean, Khamzat versus Sean would be super entertaining, but I think we can all agree that if Khamzat is going and ragdolling Robert Whittaker, he is just going to run through Sean with ease. I mean, Sean's board stance he has, that won't put up to the wrestling abilities of Khamzat Chimaev. Next up, the most exciting division. I mean, it is so action-packed, the light heavyweight division. Asper and Magomedov will be taking on each other in March, which I might be at. I'll have to see. But we also have some other matchups. You know, Jiří Procházka, ranked number 2. You got the 3rd-ranked Tom Blachowicz taking on Carlos Ulberg. We're doing Peron Magomed. I think the winner of that, no matter what, I don't see a rematch taking place. If Magomed wins, they're pulling the trigger on Jiří. They're giving Jiří the title shot. But if Pereira wins, I think you see the winner of Jan Blachowicz and Carlos Ulberg get the title shot, especially if it's Jan Blachowicz. I mean, you have to think, Jan Blachowicz and Alex Pereira went to a close split decision. Some people thought Jan should have won. Okay, it was that close. So I'm excited to see what takes place. Number 7th-ranked Khalil Roundtree Jr. is also in the mix. I think they're going to try and give him the number 4-ranked Jamahal Hill to put him back into the top 5. But light heavyweight division is set for a good, fun year. And if, I wanted to say my buddy's on Alex Pereira, but Magomed Ankalaev, he might be inevitable. I might have to go with Magomed Ankalaev to dethrone Alex Pereira. And then if Magomed takes on Jiří, I'll have to see where we're at right now, but I might have to ride with my boy Jiří. Next up, and lastly, is the men's heavyweight division, and as far as the year goes, we're getting one fight. We are getting one fight this year. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts. They're saving Aspinall and John Jones as potentially the climax of 2025. It's going to be the biggest fight of all time, and I just do not see John Jones giving out on this fight. I don't see John Jones backing out of this. There are no other options. Okay, just Dana White put it plainly, but when people are talking about an Alex Pereira super fight, like let's say Alex goes out and knocks out Magomed Ankalaev, which is a real possibility, people will say there's no one left for the fight, he should take on John Jones. I don't think people understand how easy it is to beat Alex Pereira. No one just does takedowns on him. You know, Hamblovich set the blueprint, and no one has copied it. Mind you, Jiří is not a takedown artist, and when he did shoot for a takedown, he was not good at it and got TKO'd. When Jamahal Hill took him on, got caught right off the bat. Khalil Roundtree Jr. was standing with him all the time, which is why he lost. I mean, it's the name of the game when you take on Pereira, and John Jones will run right through that. So Aspinall versus John Jones has to happen. John Jones, you can retire after you beat Tom Aspinall. Then there will truly be no one left for him to fight. But I think we can all agree that if John Jones doesn't take it, his legacy may be a bit tarnished. Now, let's hypothetically say John Jones refuses to fight Aspinall and Aspinall has to defend an interim belt. There's the number 2-ranked Ciryl Gane. There's the number 6-ranked Halton Almeida. Those are both great options. There's even the 3rd-ranked Alexander Volkov. If I could do a little matchmaking right now, I'm doing Halton Almeida, Ciryl Gane, maybe in Paris, maybe in the summer. I'm doing Alexander Volkov probably against Aspinall as a reward, but Aspinall runs through him. And, you know, Curtis Blaydes, Sergey Pavlovich, they both got fights coming up in the next few months. It's going to be an absolute crazy, crazy ending to the year. But that's all we got in terms of who everyone could be potentially taking on next. I know we've been talking about Adesanya Imavov. That is the next fight night going down in Saudi Arabia at Riyadh Seasonal Getaway, whatever they call it. And this is a fun card. You also have Shahram Magomedov and Michael Page in the co-main event. Sergey Pavlovich and Jairzinho Rozenstruik, someone's going to sleep in that. Said Nurmagomedov and Vinicius Oliveira. These are two bantamweights who could have a massive year. The return of Ikram Akhachev and Andre Munoz in the men's middleweight division. On the prelims, you got Shamil Gaziev, who everyone thought was going to be the next big thing. You got Terrence McKinney, who's never been the distance in his career. Fairzayam is back after his nasty knee knockout of Matt Frivola. Jasmine Jasu Devicius, that is who's taking on Myra Buenal Silva at flyweight. So Myra Buenal Silva is leaving the women's bantamweight division. Very interesting. I mean, you got a lot of fun fights, guys. UFC is on fire, and 2025 is going to produce some very good things. That's all we got for today's episode. You know, it sucks. There's no UFC event to cover, but we always find stuff to talk about. There's always UFC news, NFL news, and just stuff in general, guys. All right, I'm excited for the year. It's going to be a good one. It's really going to decide where my trajectory in life goes. You know, I'm going to be dealing with a lot of things post-college because, you know, my whole life it's been school, 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 school. After high school, it's been college. And now after college, I'm in the real world. I've been learning to fend for myself. I'm truly out on my own. And honestly, I'm built for some big things in this world. And I'm ready for all the challenges the world throws at me. You know, mental challenges, physical challenges. I'm all about that. And hey, if anyone wants me to discuss something on here, if anyone has good ideas for segments, please let me know. But as for now, guys, I will send you all off. Have a fantastic weekend, week, whenever you're listening to this. Make sure to know that I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.